This isn't just a game, it's a once-in-a-generation event. The Harlem Globetrotters 100-year tour. Celebrate 100 years of high-flying dunks, 100 years of show-stopping moves, and 100 years of changing the game. Bring the whole family and be part of the legacy. This game is once in a century. Be there at Schottenstein Center on December 27th. Go to harlemglobetrotters.com for your tickets to the 100-year tour.
The only thing that we hang banners for, that we put up around this building, is world championships.
And, you know, the message is clear. You know, we just had to play better.
Everybody wants to take a chip and dip it in that salsa, if you know what I'm saying.
Tucker is in a better place.
No, bro, we're going all the fucking way, bro. Pack us to the bowl, bro.
Guys, this is Jeff Giannis.
And Giannis is off the Blues. What a cat, that's insane.
You're listening to Poor Man's Packers Podcast.
Hello and welcome to another edition of Poor Man's Packers Podcast, the one Packers podcast in the state of our minds. I am Spencer, joining this week with Todd. Todd.
Hello, hello.
And the Packers lose 34-26 in Denver, Colorado. It really sucked because things happen that affect more things than just the game. Packers still have a 90% chance to make the playoffs, according to the New York Times. Not all is lost, but I think expectations probably change for most fans. Todd?
All is lost.
Todd, did you have fun watching the game?
No. Okay. I had fun the first half. Second half was hell, and I hated every minute of it.
It was a really good first half, second half game, because first half, it's like, we looked really good, and even after the first drive of the second half, it was like, damn, we're up like 9 points against the number one seed in the AFC, and then we obviously fall apart in multiple ways. If we win two games, we're for sure in the playoffs. We can clinch. Did you see this? You hear this? We can clinch a playoff spot if we win on Saturday, and the Lions lose whenever they play, and they're playing the Aaron Rodgers-led Steelers.
Who's been hot.
Yep, especially this week. Did you see what Joe Barry said to him after the game?
I did.
You're the GOAT.
They're the GOAT, yeah.
I'm sure it was like half-ass apologizing. Like, I'm sorry for not putting together a better defense when you were around, outside of the Niners game where we actually held them to like 14 points or whatever the fuck it was. But Denver, kind of a house of horrors for at least playing them. Three of the most consequential losses in Packers history. You can pin on the Broncos. One, obviously, the 98 Super Bowl. Two, 2015.
That's my first football memory.
Oh, yeah, I don't even have that. You're a year older than me. The 2015 loss, where I think it was Wade Phillips put together the blueprint on like how to stop Aaron Rodgers, and then he really kind of struggled for Aaron Rodgers the rest of that year and going on after. And then obviously this one with Micah Parsons tearing his ACL, a bunch of other guys getting hurt, and then just the whole trajectory of the season changing. Not fun. We'll obviously get into that. Tony Romo, what did you think of him?
Thought he was fine.
Yeah, I didn't like him. I feel like before, when he was pretty solid, he was like buzzed. Like, he was buzzed, and now it's like he sounds hungover during these games now.
I'm going to be honest with you. I think I've gotten pretty good at just like tuning him out when he talks too much, so I don't even like, I don't like hear him talk that much, to be honest with you.
He wouldn't fucking stop talking about Bo Nix's legs. Like, he just wouldn't stop, especially the second half. Like, look at how much he's using his legs. It's like, Tony, we get it.
Well, he said at the beginning of the game, he's like, Bo Nix is going to need to use his legs. So he was like fixated on it.
Yeah, exactly.
He's like, I know he will need to use his legs. It's like, all right, dude.
This episode, we'll have our big takeaway. We'll talk about the offense and defense. Take news. We're going to talk about if we're still a Super Bowl team. Who replaces who with injuries, Ed Policy, potentially restructuring the front office, the organization, back to what it was before. Stump Spending Packers trivia, and then we will preview the Bears game after having a preview of the Bears game 2 weeks ago. But Todd, I mean, again, we've been doing this more lately. What was your big takeaway with this game?
Oh, the takeaway. I'm going to say this. On offense, we are one injury away from everything falling apart, it seems like, on the offensive line. I should have said offensive line. I meant just on the offensive line. Like, Zach Tom goes out, and the rush just, like, eroded for the rest of that quarter. And then the fourth quarter, it was a, I mean, not a well-mitigated disaster. Like, it was just bad.
Darren Kennard was, like, the third highest rated. Again, you go back and forth on PFF. On offense, they had Kennard as the third highest ranked player for the Packers on Sunday.
Gosh, that's interesting because the fourth quarter was just a... Did they just figure it out? I don't know, but the pressure was coming from the right side, if I remember right.
Right, that's what it sure seemed like.
So I don't know if that's a communication issue or what.
Yeah, there were some... LaFleur was saying today, too, there were some assignment issues up front.
Whatever the case may be, the offense just feels a little fragile with the offensive line. And then on defense, I don't know. It just feels like there needs to be so much. So many people have to step up to fill the void of Micah Parsons. That's a bad takeaway, but that's just the truth.
Yeah, and we'll talk about it more. I mean, I'm sure Jeff Hafley will go back to the simulated pressure stuff he was doing last year. I think Edgerrin Cooper is going to be a big fill-in for that because I'm sure we'll blitz him more. But yeah, I mean, overall, it's like replacing Parsons and then the offense kind of struggling, one without Christian Watson, two without Zach Tom. Not good. Aaron Banks didn't have a great game either, but yeah, we'll talk about that too. My big takeaway, and did you see this quote that Matt LaFleur had after the game? He said, "Why are we doing this if it doesn't hurt?" Like the most emo, whatever type of quote that you could get from your head coach.
What's the context? Someone asked him.
I'm sure it was something about Parsons or whatever, but I don't know. It's Matt being in his feelings. He was a lot more chipper at Tuesday's presser, but still just a little. I do think it's a funny over encapsulating. It's a very like deep thing to say as a football coach, but it's like, come on. Like I remember when we lost to the Eagles, he was like, "Well, it's about how you bounce much such as in life. It's how you bounce back." And it's like, when he said that, I was like, Jesus Christ, I want to fucking end it. Cause that was,
that's like such a football guy thing to say though. It's like if you're a football guy, you just like equate football to life.
But like saying as is life, it's like that is, I don't know how football guy that is. But one of my big takeaways was just how deflated the team was after the Parsons injury, where I don't like...
Same. I was also deflated.
Yes. The like Mickey Mouse, Disneyfication of how you view the team. It's like I wanted to see like Matt LaFleur gather the troops or Jordan Love get the guys together, but they kept going to the sideline and it's just everyone looked like, you know, their fucking dog got ran over by a car or something. It was just absolutely brutal. And it's like, I know and Rodgers wouldn't rally the troops per se, but I feel like they were always like ready to fight for him just so that they wouldn't get yelled at or called out. And with Jordan Love, I think it's nice
that he doesn't. Kind of like Rodgers going down.
Yeah, but it like maintains a standard when it doesn't seem like Jordan Love really did much of anything to rally the troops or anyone on the defense. Rashawn Gary apparently after the game talked to the defensive end group and said, you know, we gotta really perform now with Micah being down, blah blah blah. But it's like LaFleur too, and it's dumb to complain about something like this when you don't have, you know, we're not in that locker room. But I was like, I just, you know, we at the end of the game, even we were down 8 points. Like, that game was never out of question throughout the entire, until the clock ran zero. So, I don't know. Yeah. It was deflating in a lot of ways.
Yeah, it was a huge downer. Like, when you see him go off, and then, like, you watch the replay, and you see his, like, knee and shin, like, the ricochet that you see happen, like, when someone tears their Achilles or when someone blows out their knee. And, like, I feel like over years of watching football injuries just on TV, like, you get a pretty good feel of, like, oh, that's really bad. Like, I don't know what it is. Like, I know it's his knee or whatever, but I'm like, when you can see, like, the movement where there's not supposed to be movement in someone's leg, and you're like, oh, he's not coming back.
Yeah.
Because he was standing on the sidelines, and my wife was like, oh, maybe he'll come back. And I was like, I don't. It's a non-contact knee injury. Mm-hmm. And watching the replay, I'm like, I think he's... He just was able to walk off the field, and
when it was
he's not coming back.
When it was the wide shot, and you hear Jim Nantz say, "Oh, Parsons is down," and you're like, "Oh no!" And then like him or Romo says it was non-contact, and you're like, "Oh no!" Yes. And then it goes to him, and you see the replay, and you're like, "Oh fuck!" And the weird thing for me watching it, because usually it's like players are sad or, you know, disappointed, somber. Some of them are in a lot of pain. Parsons just looked mad, you know, like it was a very different reaction to an injury like that than you usually see. Maybe like Tyreek Hill's was very weird earlier this year when he was like clapping his hands and looked like excited. And mm-hmm. Parsons was kind of the opposite end of that, where it's like he was mad at his body for giving out on him.
Has he said anything has he tweeted or anything?
He did tweet something out saying he will rise again, and then he put out a separate tweet too with like a lion with one eye, like with a scar over the other one, and it said September. So his goal is to be back for September next year.
Dude, 20 sack year incoming.
Yeah, if he continues first 5 years having at least 12 sacks, if he can do it again next year, that would be really, really impressive. I mean, he probably wouldn't come back player of the year, but we might be getting ahead of ourselves on that.
I just hope that the injury doesn't like forever slow his, because like his game is explosiveness. Like I don't know, Christian Watson came back, he looks explosive still, so I have hope, and he came back super fast, so that's good. But like sometimes you see guys, they blow out their knee and they're never the same again, and it's like
very
bad.
Yeah, very optimistic. Yeah, I mean, guys like Joey Bosa, one of the Bosa brothers, he tore his ACL and he had like 3 consecutive Pro Bowl seasons after that. There's more good than bad for recovering, and him being 27
especially
years
lately.
Old, yes, and being like a freak, like you expect him to be ahead of schedule when he's, you know, come training camp next year.
He is more Adrian Peterson freak than Rashawn Gary. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like Rashawn Gary post is just like his body is not there. So. Yeah.
Offense. I mean, God, the game started great. A lot of goes in Denver that you could hear multiple times. That was pretty cool. Jordan Love, I mean, he started great. Again, I mean, most first half yards, I think, in his career. He was 17 for 22, 215, 1 touchdown, a 123 passer rating, and 5 different players had a catch of at least 18 yards in the first half. He finished 24 for 40, 276, the 1 touchdown, 2 picks. Not very good coming out of the second half, our second series there where he aired it up and that got picked. Not very good. I mean, there was good things too. He had that scrambling play on fourth down. He had that...
That one was really nice, actually. I didn't think he was getting away.
He had that other scramble where he had the silly body that just gave out on him, where I think he ran it for like 20 yards, I feel like, even. What was it?
Well, there was one that he...
Yeah, 24. It was 24 yards.
Are we talking about the same one? Yeah.
Yeah, so that was pretty cool. And then, I mean, he had a lot of good passes. He had a outside one to Dobbs that was good. I mean, Matthew Golden, those passes looked really crisp. But then it was, I mean... The Wicks INT where he dropped it and then it got picked off. Not a good ball. Wicks still should have caught it, but a little bleh. You know, in these big moments, would be nice to see more out of him. But Jordan Love, you know, it was. One for four in the red zone, too.
I didn't feel like he was playing a bad game. I just felt like... I don't know. There is always the bad throws that you see from him from time to time, but I also felt like the receivers were just like, I don't know, magnifying the bad throws. The Watson one is tough. I don't know. Like the timing of it's tough. Yeah, he underthrows it. And like the timing of like, is that the time to take a shot? Which, whatever. I don't know. It's like, again, I sit here and I say we got to let Jordan Love throw the ball, and then I can't really criticize him on that. So it's like,
and then people get on Matt for like coasting in the second half, and we aired it out the second drive of the second half.
Yeah, I don't know. It's a average to below average game for Love for me.
I would agree with that. Receivers, and we'll talk about Christian Watson first. He did finish 3 for 29, the long of 19. Very early on, he had the staple, the like 10-yard out for the first down. And I thought about it after we recorded last week, but I don't think we had any of those against the Bears. And I bet we didn't attempt them because the Bears have so many picks this year, and that's a very interceptable.
It's a really tough throw.
Right. So I wonder how much of that was like risk adverse. I'm very curious to see if we see any of those this week. He had the huge pickup before the end of the half after we were like backed up after a special teams penalty, of course, and it got us like some breathing room there. And then obviously when he got hurt, that sucked. I mean, I don't think Christian Watson's ever gotten hurt in a game and came back into it. It was announced as a chest injury. He went to the hospital after the game, was discharged, and flew home with the team. There's a chance he'll play this week. But with a guy like Christian, and I mean, I'm a pussy myself, but it's like you just knew he wasn't coming back. Obviously, he was in a lot of pain too, but it's like he doesn't come back when he gets hurt. And it, like, if he plays this week, it'll be like, so why couldn't you have just came back in that last game? I don't know. I'm being overly critical here because he is like the most important guy on offense besides Jordan Love or Josh Jacobs, yep, probably. But I don't know. Just, I hope he's back this week. That would be huge, but we'll have to see.
Yeah, I don't know what to think about him and his injuries. Like, for one, usually when he's injured, it's been his hamstring, which is like, I get you not putting a guy back in for his hamstring. But I also do get to, like, not putting him back in with a shoulder injury, too. I'm also like, maybe he just doesn't know. Like, maybe he's like, I don't know what's wrong with it. And the doctor's like, well, we're not putting you back in. Like,
I'm very glad it wasn't a broken collarbone, because that was obviously everyone's right first thought, I'm sure. But it's like, he's almost like one of those guys.
People brought that up right away, but, like, when I just remember, like, when Rodgers broke his collarbone, he was in pain.
Yeah.
And Christian did not he looked like something's wrong, mm-hmm, but like, I don't know, I feel like Rodgers was kind of like writhing a little bit. Anyways, that was just my initial thought.
Very important.
Like, this is weird. Yeah. Like, he doesn't look like he's in pain.
Reed had a huge pickup on third down, just wide ass open, picked up like 30. Then soon after that, he had another one where he ran out of the backfield and breaks a tackle for the first, which we haven't seen a lot of. Again, that yards after catch, yards after contact that we don't get from a lot of receivers. Golden, I mean, I thought he had a really good game. He was tied with Reed with 55 yards as the top pass catcher. Just really crisp routes. The nice to go from, like, in that stadium, a shaded area to a very bright area and still catching the ball. Yeah. I thought that was huge. The PI call on one of the white corners in the league, I thought this was hilarious. So, and I thought, yeah, I thought that was a pretty ticky tack. Like,
I do wonder, at the letter of the rule, is that a flag you can throw, or does that not matter?
I don't know.
Like grabbing his hand. I think you can't.
Right.
But they don't usually throw the flag.
Right.
When someone does that, they just let it go.
But that same white corner, so the only white corners I know of are him and Cooper DeJean.
Cooper, yeah.
And it's funny how the guy...
Washington have one too?
Maybe. But the one of the white guys, you know, this one on the Broncos, leads the league in DPIs. Like, he has to, you know, a white dude playing corner in the NFL.
There's three. Cooper DeJean, Riley Moss with the Broncos, mm-hmm, and then Ethan Bonner with the Dolphins.
Oh, okay. There you go. I wonder if he actually plays. And then
the legend, Jason Sehorn.
Golden two on third down in the fourth. Huge. Needed that to keep the drive going when nothing was going right. He only played 35% of the snaps behind Dobbs, Reed, Wicks, and Watson. Bo Melton had 9 total snaps. It felt like it was more than that.
Yeah.
Romeo Dobbs had the one fadeaway from Love, probably his best throw of the game, for a pickup of 26. And then Wicks, like we talked about, dropped that one on fourth down. But a pretty average game overall from the receivers.
Yeah, and again, like in the first half, things were going great. Like it just all fell apart in midway through the third quarter and the fourth. So I don't know. I'm trying to remember, did Micah get hurt end of the third? And then things just felt like they deflated.
Very, very end.
From,
yeah,
wherever that was. So,
tight ends. Luke Musgrave, 4 for 52, was pretty good in this game. He had that huge diving catch when we were backed up.
That was a nice catch.
And then he rolled forward for like 2 or 3 more yards, which was nice. He's not going to get yards after contact, but he will roll for a couple extra yards for you. He had another huge one at the end of the half that got us into field goal range. Josh Wiley got concussed early on, so we were only down to 2 tight ends.
Dude, out on his feet.
yeah, when he just went limp, it's like, oh boy. So we'll have to see if he's able to play this week.
Also, do you think it was possible for Josh to play that any worse?
Yeah, I mean, I didn't love the play call either, but it's just he got hurt on the play.
Could have gone anywhere else. Josh just ran right.
Josh away. Jacobs also got banged up with that sore knee that he's been playing through.
Yeah.
Fitzpatrick actually did outsnap Musgrave in this game, 46 to 34, but that's probably more of a Wiley thing than anything else.
Sure.
That'll answer for the tight ends. Running backs, Josh Jacobs, I mean, the touchdown catch, a very cool Aaron Jones-esque in the corner of the end zone. Like, once he caught the ball, you knew it wasn't coming out of his hands.
That was, like, amazingly strong hands for Josh Jacobs. Like, a dude who went how many years without a receiving touchdown?
Yeah.
And then he has that defender's hand between his. That was super impressive. And his, what did he have, like, a 40-yard run for the touchdown, too? Like,
one of those where it's like, I was like, oh, this is a good run. And then it turned into a great run. All of a sudden, he's running away from dudes. It's like, he is deceptively fast.
I feel like we need to pair him with, like, a big between-the-tackles downhill runner. Mm. And he would be, like, the perfect complement because, like, Josh Jacobs in space is terrifying. Josh Jacobs between the tackles, I'm like, eh.
True, but I think you want more of a wind guy than Josh Jacobs. I mean, that's what we were trying to do with Marshawn Lloyd.
100% would have agreed, but the more I watch him this season, like, as he gets older, I'm like, he's almost just, like, so good in space. I don't want him between the tackles. Like, I want, because sure. He's always trying to juke in the middle, in between the guard and the center, and I'm like, there's no room to juke. Like, you gotta just hit the hole.
And I mean, that long run, too, he was, like, untouched, which never happens. He has, like, some of the most yards after contact in the league. And then on that long run, too, it was funny to see Dobbs, like, before the play even started, he was, like, pointing out to Bo who to block. That was pretty funny to see.
Yeah, that was funny.
He did finish 12 carries, 73 yards, a 6.1 average, one touchdown. Matt LaFleur after the game said they should have gave him the ball more, but he's also banged up. I doubt he's going to practice much this week, but hopefully he plays. I assume he will play.
It's the right call. Just he doesn't need to practice at this point.
Emmanuel Wilson, not a great game. I mean, the stats, he finished with 2 carries for 3 yards. He had a terrible series where he muffed the return, ran it out of the end zone still. He missed a block early in that drive on a screen pass, and then he got the ball and ran into the back of one of his teammates, which was pretty bad. After the game,
that was like the weakest. That was like butt fumble.
Yeah,
like how did you fall over from that? I don't.
And going into the game too, he popped up on the injury report Saturday or Sunday that he was sick, and then he posted on Instagram like flu game and a picture of Jordan, and then after the game he tweeted this out and of course deleted it. Felt like dog shit today, and all y'all Dick Riding fans can go eat a pile of horse shit.
Dang. Yeah,
so he was not happy. I'm sure he saw Justice Mosqueda's tweet where he broke down like terrible plays one after another.
Okay, Emmanuel, I see you.
And Brooks actually outsnapped him 17-13. I'm sure just for mostly the pass blocking role that he brings. Brooks did have 2 carries for 10 yards. He got banged up too. And had to.
He had one nice run. That one run was really nice.
Yeah, the longest 7. He did have another catch for 6 yards too, which he does once a week. And then Marshawn Lloyd, I don't know if people saw this, but he did pop up at the end of the week as injured or whatever, his hamstring. Before that, it was a calf. And LaFleur basically said today that he isn't going to play this year, which is quite the bummer. Now it's like, I don't even want to make fun of him. I just feel bad for the guy.
I feel bad for him too, but it was just, it's like, what do we do with him? Like, just throw him on the IR? Should we just throw him on in September again?
Yeah. I mean, that's what I'm sure he'll be put on IR and then we'll have to see.
Like, what's wrong with him?
I don't know. I have no idea. It's just, especially when you're a fast freak like him, it's like, more easily so injured, weird. Not a big guy, whatever. Hopefully,
yeah,
hopefully
I wonder somewhere. How well he would hold up to getting hit.
Yeah. If he can't get through practice.
If he can't run without getting hurt.
The O-line, again, not a very good game. Pro Football Focus had Jordan Love under pressure, 27 of 46 dropbacks, a 48.7% wow. pressure rate, both season highs. 4 penalties on Rashid Walker, absolutely brutal. Tom got hurt, like we said, early on, and Kennard came in and wasn't very good. And back-to-back sacks at like the end of the game pretty much sealed it. Kennard was pretty bad down the stretch, even though PFF gave him a high grade.
Yeah, how do you get graded so high? I just don't understand that.
Maybe in the run game he had a couple big blocks, but yeah.
He is good in the run game.
Took away the jumbo set too, which I'm curious if they're going to find a way to get an extra offensive lineman out there this week. But yeah, I don't know. That was the offense.
Is Tom, what is the status of Zach Tom?
So Tom said there's no structural damage. So it's a week-to-week thing. We'll see if he plays this week. The Bears don't get a ton of sacks, but obviously you'd rather have him out there, and he's been nursing that oblique injury all season too. So he's been a warrior and still playing pretty well, and I wonder if we'll see him.
I think it's – I don't know. I feel like just let him sit, right? Like, it's the Bears.
I don't know.
It's an important game, but, like, if he really injures it again
– if we win this week, we're pretty much – locked for the playoffs, you know.
And so, I guess week 18 is a bye.
They did beat the Cowboys, but it's pretty much the NFC North championship game this week. We go from like a 40% chance to a 70% chance if we win. So it's like I'd almost want him to play this week, and then after that, maybe he can rest up for the playoffs.
Yeah, I just feel like because we basically secure getting in. So like even if the Vikings are good. So, like, if JJ plays really well against us and we lose to them in week 18, it's like, who cares?
Right. With that, anything else on the offense?
No.
Okay. Well, then just going to say again, Josh Jacobs' dog. Josh Jacobs, like, what a good game out of a dude who was questionable coming in.
Yeah, that dude is... I feel like I criticize, like, maybe I don't even say it out loud, but I, like, criticize some of the dumb stuff he does between the tackles that I don't like. And then he goes and busts one for 40.
Yeah.
And then he does something else, and I'm like, oh, that was a dumb run. And then he catches that ball in the corner of the end zone that I was like, no, he has no business catching that. That's ridiculous. So, like, all the time I'm being shocked by Josh Jacobs. So.
Yep.
He's awesome.
He's a good football player. I'm sure he'll be back. He has to be back next year, too, when it looked like kind of a 2-year and C deal. So, we'll see. With that, we will have a quick commercial break.
Drinking and driving is a decision that will change your whole world. Things will never be the same once you get a DUI, because legal fees and time in court are just the beginning. Getting into a crash is another way your world could be irreversibly changed after drinking and driving. Your vehicle may not be the only thing that gets damaged in that crash. You could face a life-altering injury or even death. But you're not the only one who could face those consequences. Your decision to drink and drive could permanently change someone else's world, whether you injure them or leave their loved ones grieving. The next time you're out drinking, call a rideshare, a taxi, a sober friend, or a designated sober driver. Always plan for a safe ride home. The only decision that'll change your world for the better is the decision to call for a sober ride. It's never worth it to drive drunk. Don't risk it. Drive sober or get pulled over. Paid for by NHTSA.
All right, and we're back with the defense. The defense, not their best game. Even when Mike was in there, they were pretty meh. I mean, they started off okay, but whatever. No sacks on Sunday. They gave up touchdowns 4 out of 4 times in the red zone. I don't know. I don't even know what else to add over all of them.
That is like the appropriate response to like how this all feels. It's just like, yeah, like it's not even that the defense was like, it wasn't a great game, but they weren't like horrible. And like, I guess I'll say this. All we have to do is catch 2 of the 4 pickable balls that Bo Nix throws. Well, and this is a completely different game.
You know, the worst one.
The Carrington Valentine one?
The play before, or 2 plays before Micah tore his ACL was when Xavier McKinney dropped the deep bomb. If he catches that.
The Xavier drop was so frustrating because I was like, you see it. And if this is a year ago, we're like, oh.
Yeah.
Easy.
He doesn't get a lot of chances. He finally gets one, drops it, and then it play later, Micah tears his ACL.
When you see Bo Nix's face when he throws that ball, he's like, shit. And it's like, he got baited into it, and then we can't capitalize. And like, has Carrington Valentine ever caught a ball?
Yeah, I mean, literally, I don't know. He's caught as many balls as he's made tackles at the line of scrimmage.
He's caught as many balls in the NFL as me. So he's got that going for him.
Parsons, I mean, I don't even know how much you want to talk about it. He forced the fumble early, which was pretty cool. Just swung the dude around. The refs did call one hold on him early in the game, which was nice to see. I don't know. Everyone acted like he died, even on like Twitter. Like there was a couple posts.
I felt like he died.
That Dyer kid was like, thank you so much, Micah Parsons, for such a memorable season. I'm like, he's not dead. Like, I know this really sucks, but he's not dead. And I don't want to say I don't want to say it's a good thing because it's obviously not.
Oh, let's see. I love the spin zone.
The timing could be so much worse.
How?
If it happens at the beginning of the year,
okay,
we have no Micah. If it happens in the playoffs, one, it's even more heart-wrenching because it's like, we'll think we're a Super Bowl team for longer, and then he's going to be out even longer going into next season. It happening right now, which is...
So like by that logic, wouldn't it just be better if he was out week one, tears it week one, and then he comes back?
Well, no, because then what are we still like a playoff team? Like, how good of a team is this going to be without him? We don't get to watch him play football for 15 weeks like we got to this season. So it's like, we lose him. We don't get him for the playoffs, but we got to watch Micah Parsons, and he should be ready for next year. Like it happened in like the good middle ground, I feel like.
I don't know if I'm ready to spin zone it yet, but
I mean, it's not a good thing.
It's not a good thing. I feel like it's only bad. Only bad things have happened in the past couple days. I don't know. Like, yes, it's super fun to watch. He brings like this. I don't even want to say like mentality, because like the defense has the mentality that we love, right? Like they rally to the football. They, you know, but like it's just that juice where it's like at any. It's. I would equate it to having like a Hall of Fame quarterback, but on defense, where it's like any single play, he could blow it up. Like when you go into game with Rodgers, you feel like you can win any game. I don't know if that's defense. I don't know if an end can affect the game that much. Maybe he doesn't touch the ball all the time, but like just the point being is like you're never out. Like when you're on defense, you're never out when Mike is on the field.
And it was something like the first four plays, he lined up in like four different spots. So we've done that with Gary in the past, but obviously it's not going to be the same if we attempt that with him.
No.
I mean, Gary, he didn't play a terrible game either. He had a huge run stop, which forced a second and long, which was nice. He still hasn't had a true TFL or sack.
Didn't he have that weeks. That wasn't a TFL when he ran down the line?
I thought so, but this was the stat that I heard multiple times. Okay. So maybe it's wrong, but whatever. I don't know. After the hot start when he was leading the league in sacks, now he hasn't had one again in 6 weeks. Just not very good.
All but like one of those sacks that he had was he was playing cleanup for Micah. So
I think two of them, Micah wasn't even on the field, but I could be wrong on that, but I know that was a thing early. Yeah. Rob Domofsky had this stat Parsons pressure rate was 64%, which is like highest in the league. Rashawn Gary's is 28th, which is the largest gap between the first and second player with that statistic on a single team. So it just kind of shows you what we're missing.
What do you, if you can only have one and contract doesn't matter, so they both cost $0.
I would take Parsons over Gary.
Not what I was going to ask. Enigbare or Gary, who do you want? No, dollars don't matter. Who do you want? Like one has to be off the team.
I would take, you said Gary.
Gary or Enigbare?
Oh, or I thought you said Parsons.
No.
Contract doesn't matter.
I just like you can factor in age. They're pretty close in age.
For this year, I would still take Rashawn Gary. I think he's more of an overall well-rounded player, and he's a big body. I could see it argued the other way, but it'll be interesting now to see, too, what happens when Gary's the main dude, when, like, you know, JJ was kind of cleanup guy, too, if Micah isn't out there, but I understand where you're coming from.
My point is more along the lines of, like, I feel like Gary is good in the run game. Like, he's not bad in the run game. He's, like you said, he's a big body. He's still strong, and he's semi-explosive. What he brings in the pass game, I think, in my opinion, is less than JJ, and I think JJ's better in the run game. I think he gets off blocks better in the run game.
Maybe. I'd like to look it up. Not like PFF, but, like, I don't know. We'll see.
Yeah, not PFF
I'd like to
would
see
be
their,
good.
I'd like to see, like, their pressure rates, because I bet they're somewhat similar. But either way, I get where you're coming from. The fact that you can make an argument either way kind of shows you which...
Well, and that's why I was trying to make the point, yeah. Like, without contract, who do you take? Because with the contract, it's ridiculous.
Right. Linebackers, Cooper had a huge tackle for loss to lose 3. He did finish with 2 TFLs. Huge drop or a huge tackle from him on 4th down 2, breaking up a ball to keep the game alive late. That was huge.
That was nice.
Quay also had a TFL, and I don't think we have to sit on this because we will sit on it because we'll talk about it for Take News. But I think we're going to see a lot more from the inside linebackers going forward.
Does Quay get a contract extension?
I don't know. Now that it's taken so long, he might get priced out of it. Right. And the way the team is structured right now, I especially like you kind of want to see what's interesting is if the Packers might even have to wait to see what happens in free agency. Because, again, it's Dobbs, it's Sean Ryan, it's Rashid Walker, it's Quay Walker. I said Romeo Dobbs. I know there's one or two other guys out there Malik Willis, whatever he gets, you know, if he signs elsewhere.
He's gone, though, right? Like, Malik Willis is a foregone conclusion. He's not sticking around.
Yeah, unless he wants a nice cushy job in Green Bay where he's a backup and Jordan Love gets banged up here and there.
He's
you only get 4 comp picks. So it's like if 5 or 6 guys get decent deals and Packers are saving some money by not signing a couple of these guys, then maybe they're more active in free agency than we would think, because that also takes away your draft picks as well. You know, comp picks will cancel out if you sign free agents. Right. So I'm curious to see what happens with that.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see how it all shakes out. I don't know.
Yeah, good point.
Not
secondary.
To get too far ahead of ourselves.
Right. Yeah, I know. I don't even want to bring that shit up. Secondary, feels like we get or give up a lot of third downs converted against us, especially like wide open receivers. I mean, 3 times on that 1 touchdown drive they converted on third downs, which is just a fucking pain in the ass. Broncos on third down in this game, or I think this was just in the first half, were 4 for 6. The Packers were 0 for 3 converting that 1 fourth down though. Keyshawn and Bullard, god, that fucking
dude,
they had the holding, not the holding, but the
penalty that Bullard got when he threw him on the ground. Is that what you're talking about?
Which I feel like was more Keyshawn than Bullard. Like if Keyshawn isn't there, I don't think it happens.
I agree at the start, but watch the second replay where they have a camera angle from behind Bullard and you see him throw him to the ground, like push him to the ground. It was Bullard.
Keyshawn also had that, the Sutton, like, out and up for 41 where he just wasn't sniffing it. Also allowed that touchdown in the corner of the end zone where, I mean, it's like he wasn't even there. Rough game. Valentine, he missed that tackle that he jumped at the line of scrimmage. Didn't touch the ball either. Just absolutely brutal. He had another one, too, where he didn't have a very good game overall. I do wonder, and I'm not asking for this, but I don't think I mentioned it when Halfley said it. Kamal Hayden, if he gets any snaps, he didn't have any in this game. But Halfley said a couple of weeks ago that he looked so good in practice that he even said to DA, Derek Ansley, the secondary coach, that they need to find a way to get him on the field. So he's looked really good in practice.
Can you put him in for Nixon? Nixon gets, I don't know, cooked but, sometimes.
But Nixon's also, like, against the Bears, he had a really good game. He only allowed two completions, and he had the game-sealing INT, which I don't know how many corners are going to break off
that. I don't know. Yeah, that's a fair point. Like, he did save the game at the end, but, like, he gets freaking torched.
It isn't pretty when, yeah. When
it's either good or it's horrible.
Yeah. X also had the two picks though, or the two plays where he should have picked it off, like we talked about.
Did you see Hobbs was on the field for like two plays?
Yeah, he graded out well on PFF too. He was a top five player. I think he was like number three, and he didn't make any huge mistakes, I thought.
He got hurt on that one.
He did. There wasn't an update on that either, so I assume he's fine, but it looked like he was in pain, like off the sideline a little bit there. Special teams, JJ got that stupid roughing the punter penalty, just dumb for pushing the guy late. Whelan had the one punt, which was a touchback, which wasn't very good. And again, the multiple penalties on special teams are just killer. We have the sixth most special teams penalties in the league. I looked it up.
That is wild. I think there's five more teams that have more penalties than us.
The refs, especially with how much more important the kickoff has been, they have put an emphasis on penalties on special teams. So that's one reason for it. Because I looked this up like 3 or 4 weeks ago, and we were 14th. You know, we were right in the middle of the league for special teams penalties. And now after these last 2 weeks.
Yeah, where there's one on every play.
All the way up to sixth. So, yeah, I don't know. Rich being rich, whatever. McManus made all his kicks. I feel pretty good about him again, making that 53-yarder, whatever it was.
Yep.
Solid.
53. McManus revenge game. We had him right where we wanted him.
If only. If only we had him a little closer. But, yeah, that was the game. It sucked. Deflating. I don't think the season is over. But, anything else with this game, Todd?
Do we talk? Well, never mind. I was going to bring up something that I think we're talking about later in the episode for Take News. So, never mind.
Oh, I did have, like, three other mini things. One, the Matt LaFleur terrible challenge. He's been really good this year, but that was so fucking bad. I was like, oh, maybe he sees something we don't see, and then we see the replay.
Matt Tax.
Like, I don't know. Yeah, the Matt Tax.
It's Matt Tax.
At halftime, they had sheep riding. Did you see that?
Excuse me?
I think you might have talked about it before. Yeah, like, because when I went to a local rodeo before, at like halftime, they get children with hockey helmets, and they put them on the back of sheep. They did that at the Broncos Stadium, Mile High, which I thought was pretty funny. Some of the beat reporters were posting videos from it.
On the field?
On the field.
How do they keep them from pooping on the field?
They probably don't. They probably just pick it up after.
Okay. That'd be fun if it was like a wet one, and then you get tackled and your face goes in it, and you get the splatters on your face, and then you're like, oh, it was that important to have the sheep on the field for halftime? Cool.
It was funny because like one of them got away and there was like a border collie out there that rounded it back up.
That's actually awesome.
And then the only other things with the CBS coverage, I hated how often we heard that fucking Ice Spice SpongeBob song. And I also have written down here.
Ice Spice SpongeBob. I have no idea what you're talking about.
If you heard it, you would know. It's Big Guy. Big Guy. That dumb one.
I know who SpongeBob is. I'll say that.
Yeah. Okay. And then the Channing Tatum fragrance commercial that you loved, which we got a couple times.
Did you think that was bad? It was horrible.
Every fragrance commercial is ridiculous. That one especially was with him like catching the arrow.
Yes. He shoots the arrow and then runs and catches his own. I'm like, what is this?
There's no cool fragrance commercial. They're all like artsy and in like a weird universe and I don't know.
I just think it's the worst. I don't even know how to explain why I think it's the worst. I just think that's the worst one I've... Like, normally commercials don't even catch my eye. You're just, whatever it is. Yeah, dumb car commercial. This one I was like, did he just catch his own arrow? Yeah. And then, like, flex in front of the camera? Like, what? I don't know.
With that, we will have Take News.
Football time. Take News.
All right, Take News for the week. We got a couple of them here. I think we'll just start off with the most obvious. Is this still a Super Bowl team? Going into the week, I think our Vegas odds were something at like 11 to 13%. They dropped down to 5% after this game. Not very good. Again, we still have a 90% chance of making the playoffs. I think our NFC chances are 42% right now, I think. Or no, it's 43. The Bears are at 52. If we win, it goes up to 70% for the NFC North, which should be the 2 seed in the NFL more than likely. But Todd, obviously a shitty game, but do you think this is still a Super Bowl team? Not a playoff. I think it's a playoff team for sure, but a Super Bowl team.
Well, we played the entire regular season to get to the playoffs, so I think we're getting there. But
yeah.
Do I think it's a Super Bowl? It could be. Do I think it is? No. I just like you need an X factor to get to the Super Bowl, or you need to be ultra consistent in like every facet of the game. Like, you just can't make mistakes if you're going to be... Like, the Eagles. Like, the Eagles weren't... I didn't feel like they were super... They ran the ball super well, though. So, like, they did have an X factor. But you just have to be... We just, like, kind of, like, our X factor was the pressures and the sacks on defense mixed with just the way that the defense kind of clamped down. Like, I feel like the defense was kind of, like, the front... The leading leg, I guess, if you will. Yeah. So, that's kind of... I think it's a no.
Yeah, I mean, can we? Absolutely. I think the 5%, like 1 in 20, I think that's pretty good.
Feels like good. Feels like I'm happy with those odds.
Yeah, like I kind of like that's probably about what I would say, cuz it's like, you know, 2010, that was a ragtag bunch of guys that had 13 or 15 players on the IR. I don't think any to the caliber of Tucker Kraft or Micah Parsons. And it's like, again, Jeff Hafley's a good defensive coordinator. If he can still find pressure using the linebackers, or if Baron Sorrell turns it on, maybe Brenton Cox or Colin Oliver join the team and then find a pass rush that way. But I think the big thing is just Jordan Love. Like, if Jordan Love can go out there now and the offensive line can hold up, we're not going to play a defense as good as this Broncos one unless we make it to the Super Bowl and play them. You know, there's no real team in the NFC that has a D as good as that. And it's, you know, again, Christian Watson, Reed's looked really, really good since coming back. Matthew Golden, if he can get involved, Wicks, Dobbs, like if we're an air attack offense and Jordan Love turns into Toyotathon again, I think obviously the chances go up and that's what we would need to have happen. But I think it's still very possible in such a wide open NFC, but obviously the chances take a huge hit after the Parsons injury.
I think that's a good point of like, so maybe if the keys to the offense go to Jordan and it's like, we're just going to sling the ball and like run when we need to, but we're going to sling the ball. Like, there's a chance. Like, we have an opportunity. Like, it could happen. If Christian can play this week or next week and kind of like be healthy. I mean, that offense is, I mean, we've seen it the last few weeks. Like, it is a different offense with Christian Watson at the helm. You get Jaden Reed back, you know, we have guys that can step up and make plays. So, like, that's a good point. If the offense could be the feature, I guess. Like, it doesn't have to be the defense. And the defense is still going to be good. We're still going to hold people. I just think it's...
Keyshawn will.
Yeah, you know, yeah, we'll hold people.
Because penalties.
Because penalties. And throw people on the ground after the play's over. Yeah. But, like, we're going to hold... I think we're still going to be a good red zone defense. It's just, like... killing those drives early on that we've been so good at this year, where it's like you just kind of wreck somebody, it's a 3-and-out, and it's like they don't know what to do. I think that's kind of, I don't think the rush is there. So,
sticking with that, next part of Take News for the week, replacements. We'll just go through it here. There are a couple big injuries. At worst, they should be week to week. Parsons is obviously a different animal, but you know, what are we going to do to replace these guys? So Parsons, starting there, how do you replace Michael Parsons?
You can't, but like, does Colin Oliver, Brenton Cox coming back, like, give enough spark? To be fair, like, you could... Parsons was playing like 60 snaps a game, which was honestly a ridiculous amount for a guy that's that explosive. So does getting more rotation in there, LVN coming back, rotating in, like, is there an opportunity to create that pass rush that way? I hope so, but like, it's going to be an uphill battle. Brenton Cox probably gives us the best opportunity to have a rush, honestly, at this point. Like, if he can look like where he's flashed at times, that's our best bet.
and he's fresh. I don't remember if it was a knee or a foot injury that got him on IR originally, but if it's his foot, then it's like, oh, maybe he's pretty fresh and ready to go.
Did LVN, I saw him out there.
He played like 20-some snaps.
Okay, yeah, he did play. Okay.
Someone who didn't play, who I think could help here too, is Baron Sorrell, the third-round pick. He's flashed at times as well.
Yeah, true.
Like you said, Rashawn Gary, LVN, they got to step up. If Rashawn Gary can be anything close to the 2022 version of him before tearing his ACL, I mean, that season before it happened, like he wasn't Micah Parsons, but you would like watch him on defense and you're like, he's making a pressure like every other play. And then, like you said, Brenton Cox and Colin Oliver, I would still be surprised because, again, Colin Oliver hasn't practiced since he was in college.
Right.
You know, he had a mini camp practice. So I would say it's probably even less than a coin flip that he joins the team. He'll probably go back to IR just because the way this team's structured too, like Aaron Mosby is our sixth defensive end or whatever right now. Brenton Cox, he's a huge special teams player,
right?
You know, he makes a tackle at least once a week. Brenton Cox doesn't play special teams, so it's like it's tough to
bring both
Brenton Cox and Colin Oliver onto the team when you assume neither can play special teams, with Colin Oliver being a rookie who hasn't practiced and Brenton Cox who's never shown a willingness, I guess, probably to play special teams.
Yeah, and you don't want to piss Brenton Cox off. We know that.
Yeah, he has a past. Zach Tom, no structural damage. What would you do at right tackle this week? I assume he's going to be out. I wouldn't be shocked. I assume he will be questionable. Evan Williams will be out or questionable. Christian Watson, too, I'm sure he'll be questionable, along with Josh Jacobs. But what do you think about Zach Tom?
I think you sit Zach Tom. I don't – correct me if I'm wrong, but, like, that's not a good rush for the Bears. I don't see the danger in keeping Kennard in there. Like, you know what I mean? Like, you talk about how good that Broncos defense was. Very – I mean, what are they – are they number one for sacks in the league across?
Yeah.
So I don't know. I feel like you rest Tom just like if we were to go on a run, you need Zach Tom. Like you can't have Zach Tom being injured week to week. So,
yeah.
And the oblique thing seems weird. It can happen anytime.
Right. Yeah. But yeah. We saw that in Cleveland. I guess I'm curious this week though, too. It seems like Jordan Morgan truly is a left tackle. He's the backup to Rashid Walker over there. If you remember that Browns game two and Tom went down, Morgan came in at right tackle and was not very good. Here we went to Kennard immediately. So I don't know if maybe we'd put Rashid Walker at right tackle and put Jordan Morgan at left tackle. Probably not, but Matt LaFleur was asked about it today, and he was non-committal on what the starting offensive line would be. I'm sure that's just gamesmanship, but still something to think about. Evan Williams, knee injury. He said it's not as bad as one that he had in Oregon where he was out for 4 weeks. So maybe he's out a week. Maybe he's out 2 weeks. I thought it was interesting that Zane Anderson was his replacement on defense.
I did too.
But yeah, what are your thoughts on that? What would you do with the secondary with Evan Williams out?
I mean, obviously, like, not... we have seen nothing of Oladapo. We've seen Bullard back there, and it's not good. So maybe, like, Zane is the best bet as far as... but, like, you also look at, too, where Evan has been so successful has been creeping down into the box and, like, playing in the box. So, like, maybe in this defense, you could put Bullard there, put Hobbs in at the slot, which has got to be his best position, right?
Yeah.
Like, and then just let Bullard play in the box. Cause like,
yeah.
And I'm sure he's going to get picked on if he is deep, but like, you just take that risk, right? I don't know.
And in the packages that Bullard has been pulled in the past, one from the slot and at safety is passing game situations. Like, he's a good run defender.
Mm-hmm.
We, like I said, we put on run plays. He's usually in the slot or at safety early in the year. So it's decent timing with us playing the Bears, who are a run-first team, and Caleb Williams is, you know, he can be risky at times. He has a low completion percentage. So I assume it's going to be Hobbs in the slot with Bullard back at safety.
Yeah.
And I wouldn't be surprised if he rotates with Zane Anderson, which, again, is still interesting with Ketan Oladapo not getting many snaps in this game when he was a fifth-round pick. I believe, you know, just the round after Evan Williams was drafted.
Yeah, have we even, like, I don't even remember preseason seeing any Ketan Oladapo.
He played a little last year because Evan or X got hurt, and then he came in, I think, and then Zane came in after him. So he played okay last year, but again, just still a little interesting that the Packers went with the undrafted special teamer Zane Anderson over him.
It would be fun to see him play. Like, he's a fun prospect. He's like, what is he, like six? He's a bigger dude, like 6'2" and decent size. So, like, it would be fun. But, like, just the fact that we haven't seen any of him, does he play special teams even? Like, I don't know.
Yeah, he does a little bit, yeah.
I just feel like I have maybe seen him do something once this year, which is just, like,
right.
Makes sense why he's not. I wouldn't put him in.
Christian Watson, who probably has the best chance to play out of this group, I would say, on Saturday.
You're asking me what we do about it?
Yeah.
I mean, I want him to play.
Out. Yeah.
Oh, if he's out, what do we do?
Yeah.
Well, you don't really have many options. I mean, you put...
I don't
understand.
What are
you asking? Because, like, who takes the spot?
Let me say this. So he goes out early third quarter, whatever it was.
Yeah.
And they're like, ugh, you know, and the offense, one with Tom being out and then him being out, and the offense just, like, slows down. They're blah.
Yep.
And it's like, and they're like, ugh, they just don't have the speed on this offense that Watson has. And it's like, well, we have Matthew Golden. I know he's not the prototypical outside receiver, but it's like, he runs good routes. He's really fucking fast. Like, you should be able to use him to spread the field a little bit, take the top off the defense, and we didn't see that. So I wonder if they're putting together something with him, maybe Luke Musgrave too, just to, you know, have that deep threat shot out there. Again, Jaden Reed, getting him coming back, I think is huge, and his yards after catch have been nice, which we haven't seen from most other guys. But I guess I'm not worried, but it's like, I would like to see Golden, and we've been saying it, you know, on and off all year, but I would like to see him get more of an opportunity to be that guy outside with his speed.
Yeah, and I would feel good about the 1-2-3-4 of Romeo, Jaden,
right,
Golden, Wicks. Like, that is not a problem to me, right? Like, would I rather have Christian? 100%. But, like, as long as it's not Savion and who's the number
Bo.
16? Bo. Like, I'm good with putting Bo and Savion in every now and then, but, like, we should be featuring the top four. Like,
right.
You know what I mean? And I feel like that doesn't happen sometimes. It's like, we get too gadgety. And I'm like, hold on. We need to just throw the ball to the good
guys.
I don't hate
the Bo Melton gadget play once a game. You know, that's worked as
100%.
Of late. But it did seem like, I was surprised seeing the snap counts, that it was 9 versus 20 snaps or whatever between the two. Because it did feel like Bo was out there more than Matthew Golden.
Or, like, if you're going to go if you're going to have three wide receivers out there, which we typically always do, and you want to run motion a shit ton, put Savion out there, put Bo out there to run the motions, and then let's rotate in and out between Romeo, Jaden, Dontavian, and Golden. You know what I mean? Like, rotate out, have your motion guy who's, you know, you're putting the miles on those guys. It's like, have him be Bo, who can conceivably run forever, and Savion, who's also an athletic freak. They just aren't great with the ball in their hand. Like, they can't catch the ball.
Yeah. So we'll see what happens there. Again, a lot of injuries in this game. It doesn't seem like any of them are going to be long-term, but I'm curious to see what the coaching staff comes up with on Saturday.
I said they can't catch the ball. Both those guys can catch the ball. I don't think they're good route runners, Bo and Savion. That's the problem.
Sure. Yeah. Very, very fair. Last thing for Take News. Should we restructure the franchise? This is something we've talked a lot about on this podcast.
Me and you?
Yeah. Well, yeah, and me talking about Mark Murphy a lot. But
Again,
the big thing Mark Murphy did when they fired Ted Thompson was restructuring the team. Forever since Ron Wolf came on in, like, 1990, when he first interviewed a couple of years earlier, he said he wouldn't take the job unless they did this, that being that the GM is in charge of the coach. He is the coach's boss. He can hire and fire the coach. Right now it is set up where Goody, the GM, Matt LaFleur, the coach, and Russ Ball, the salary cap guy, all report to the president. Again, kind of dumb to have the president be in charge of football operations. He should know what's going on, but I don't know about all of that. But Rob Domofsky had this to say. I forgot on what show it was, but this is Rob Domofsky on ESPN Milwaukee talking about the potential of a switch up with the front office and the power structure.
I do think, and I've said this a couple of times, this is not just guessing. This is it's an educated guess based on people I've talked to. I would not be surprised if Ed goes back to the old structure and gives Brian Gutekunst the power over the head coach and perhaps lets Gutekunst decide. I, from all the people I've talked to, it sure seems like that is the way that Ed's going to go moving forward with whoever the next general manager is. And I'm assuming that it's Brian Gutekunst.
Well, so does that mean that you think no matter what for LaFleur, that Goody is safe? Because their contracts align, and that was, again, that was a part of, I know we focused more on the LaFleur part during the season, but Goody was in the same boat of 2 years left on the deal, not getting the extension.
Yeah. Let me put it this way. I believe Ed will give whoever the general manager is the power over the head coach. He still obviously has to decide if Goody is his guy, but I don't think he lets, you know, Pryor signs off on the Micah Parsons trade if he doesn't fully believe in everything that Brian Gutekunst is doing. So I think I said this before, when they made the trade, I talked to somebody in the league that said, well, this tells you that, you know, Goody, or that Ed's on Goody's side, or Goody's on Ed's side, or if there are sides to be had.
I thought that was very interesting that Rob brought that up. Hadn't heard anyone else say that. Jason Wilde later on said that he hadn't heard anything like that from within the building, but Rob sounds like he has a source. Again, this is the guy who said Zach Tom would be a Hall of Fame center. I forgot some other things he's been wrong about. But Todd, I guess, initial thoughts on hearing that there?
I think, I don't know. I'm just trying to work through, like, is that, what would make that not be a good idea? Because I think, at surface level, that seems like the way that everybody does it. But I don't know enough about Goot and, like, is he good? Like, would he be good at managing the coaching staff? And, like, because I assume that goes into, too, like, and I guess maybe this is the case for it. Like, did Mark Murphy, was he the one that blocked getting, who was the special teams coordinator that then went to
Darren Rizzi?
Was he the one that blocked Rizzi?
He was actually with the Broncos.
That was like, no, we can't, we're not paying you that much. Yeah, and then out of here. So,
and then he left, and then he was like, okay, we will pay you that much. And he's like, I'm not coming back.
He was like, yeah, I see what goes on there. Yeah, I'm just trying to like find the problem with it. It seems only good.
So the problem with it, so I will sound hypocritical here, but we've kind of touched on in the past too, if they ever did make the change, this is how it should be. You said most of the league does it that way. That actually isn't true. There has been a switch now, and the majority of teams, the president does make, is in charge of football operations, or the owner.
Oh, okay. Well, the owner being, I guess that does make sense that the owner would be in charge, because owners are typically
Owner or president, like the Titans, like Milt Hendrickson is the guy kind of calling the show.
I'm just saying, like,
Milt Hendrickson, I forget.
If you're an owner that hires a president,
Chad Brinker is his name.
If you're an owner that hires a president, they would probably run it. But if you're an owner like Jerry, he's just involved.
Yeah, that's
a unique situation.
But I would say it is potentially a negative, because if you remember, Mike Sherman, his last year with the Packers, the year before, he was the GM and head coach of the team. And then Bob Harlan, and that might have happened a couple years, then Bob Harlan was like, oh, this isn't working, strips him of the GM role, hires Ted Thompson, and then the year after that, they fire Mike Sherman. And Bob Harlan said that his biggest regret was not just firing Sherman to begin with. So stuff like that can happen. And again, it's weird right now because they're on the same contract structure. Both of their contracts are running out after this year. And it's weird to have a guy who was your equal then become your boss. You know, like that's...
Do you think they ever were equal, though? Did you think... here's what I would wonder. If I was Matt, I would always be like, I bet this could change.
Sure, but it's still like when college football coaches are getting paid a shit ton now, and you get like that full contract, and it's more years usually too. It's like, would you rather sit around and maybe go to a college and be a head coach and get paid a shit ton of money
college
and not
seems
have
like
this
a mess though?
Yeah, but it's getting better because now the coaches have to do less than they were a couple of years ago. Or would you want to stick around in Green Bay and have this hanging over your head, where a guy who is your equal is now your boss, And it seems like they've had not issues at times, but disagreements. It's just, you know, it would be, it's odd timing for that too, because he has to get a new deal. So it's something that I do want to have happen. The timing is just bad because, again, I think we talked about in the past, it's like, I don't think you can really make this change until you fire the GM. And I don't think that's happening this year.
Yeah, that's interesting. I think no one's leaving or going anywhere. And so to that point of like, if they don't make the change until somebody gets fired, like that change isn't going to happen for a while. Like, I think LaFleur is not going to leave, right? Like he would have to be run out of town to give up the job. That's the way I feel.
The other report too, is when they hired LaFleur, like Goody and Russ Ball wanted to, you know, have a round of second interviews, and Mark Murphy was like, no, Matt LaFleur is the guy. So there's been some type of hesitation there. When Goody interviewed for the job, he thought it was, he would be like Ted Thompson and have control over the head coach. And like, we saw how he, as soon as he could move on from Aaron Rodgers, he did. Like, I wouldn't be surprised if he would want to bring in his own head coach rather than just stick around with LaFleur.
Yeah, that's interesting. I can see the appeal, but God, I just, for some reason, I just don't see it. I don't see Goot doing that.
Yeah, I don't know.
Something would have to change. Like, so, to where we're at right now.
If we miss the playoffs, I think, like, next year, I think he would move on from LaFleur. But if there is some hardball going on, I wouldn't be shocked if we found a new head coach, too. I don't know.
I don't know. I don't see. I see things status quo unless, like you're saying, like we miss the playoffs. Like I don't.
Right.
Which I don't. It's not happening. We're gonna make the playoffs.
Stump Spenny, do you have that ready to go? I think I am two down from being 500.
I do indeed. Stump Spenny. So, since 2015, four different tight ends have played for both the Packers and the Bears. Name three of them. This one's kind of easy. I think I would get this one.
Big Dog, obviously. Correct. How many years is this?
2015. I think you're gonna get it.
Robert Tonyan.
Correct.
Jimmy Graham.
Can you get the fourth?
Since 2015. Is it a hard one or easy one?
If you can't think of it when I tell you, you're gonna be like, oh fuck.
Yeah, because now it would go back to 2015, right? Yeah, based off of those numbers there.
Yeah, so you did good. You got the ones I would have got.
Yeah, wouldn't be Corliss, wouldn't be Finley, wouldn't be Richard. Oh, Richard Rodgers?
No.
Fuck. Okay, who was it?
So it's Tonyan, Big Dog, Jimmy Graham, and Martellus Bennett.
Sure. Okay. Yeah, I don't think I would have gotten that one. I have totally erased him.
I wouldn't
him
have
from
gotten Martellus.
I watched like a compilation of like Aaron Rodgers' fourth quarter comebacks, and one of them he threw to Martellus Bennett, and I was like, "Who is that?" And I was like, "Well, that was the like half quarter second thought," and then I'm like, "Oh my god, it's Martellus Bennett fucking wearing 80 of that
You're
piece
like,
of shit." Yeah. Okay. Cool. So I am. If I get the last two stump spendings of the season, I will be over 500 for the year and prove that I'm not an idiot. But now we will preview the Bears game. Again, very weird. We played them 2 weeks ago. Now we're playing them again. We're playing the Bears in Chicago, who are 10-4 after beating the Cleveland Browns last week. Again, we have a 43% chance to win the North. The Bears have a 52% chance. If we win on Sunday, it's a 75% chance. And if we beat the Vikings, we would be, or win one more game after that, we would be the NFC North champions. Again, Bears are the leader right now. Game is at Soldier Field, a 7:20 kickoff on Saturday. Right now, the Packers are 1.5-point favorites. Over-under is set at 46.5. And if you remember, too, so Vegas, again, it's 3 points. When we played them at Lambeau, we were 6.5-point favorite. Now we're 1.5-point favorite, so Micah Parsons cost us 2 points, apparently. Weather, I looked this up for the game. Right now, it's scheduled to be about 23 degrees and a wind of 15 miles per hour. So we'll see how windy it actually is. The announcers will be Kevin Burkhart, Tom Brady, Aaron Andrews, Tom Rinaldi, which I'm fine with. I wish they were spread out a little bit more, but I think that's a pretty solid crew.
That's a good crew.
The Bears are coming off a 3-31 point win at home against the Browns, as mentioned. Caleb Williams was 17 for 28, 242, 2 touchdowns, 0 picks, and was sacked 3 times. They averaged 4.3 yards per carry on 33 runs. Burton, the rookie, was their leading receiver with 84 yards. DJ Moore, however, had 69 and 2 touchdowns. He had that one really nice catch and throw in the end zone, going from right to left, where it looked kind of like the catch from the Niners back in the day. Very lucky, though, just very lucky. Neither Rome or Burton practiced today, too, which could be something. Rome, the second-year player, Rome Odunze, this is 2 weeks now that he has been out. He did not play against us either, so wonder if we'll see him on Saturday. Bears offense, again, points per game, they scored 26.1, which is ninth best in the league. Yards per game, it's 369, which is fifth best in the league. Again, good running team, average pass team. They run it 47% of the time, which is sixth most in the league. They have the second worst completion percentage from Caleb Williams, which is 58%. Yards per pass is 6.9, which is 18th in the league. Doesn't get sacked much, just 4.3% of the time. And again, that went up after the 3 sacks last week. And Caleb, again, has only thrown 6 picks on the year. He has the third best pick percentage in the league. Swift, the leading rusher, 935 on the season, a 4.9 average, 7 touchdowns, 254 yards receiving. Kyle Menungai, 681, a 4.9 average as well, 5 touchdowns and 97 yards receiving. He hasn't had a catch in 2 weeks. Didn't have one against us. Didn't have one against the Browns. Rome Odunze, still their leading receiver, 661, 44, and 2 touchdowns. Hasn't played the last 2 weeks. Like I said, DJ Moore, 587, 38 receptions, and 5 touchdowns. Colson Loveland, the rookie tight end, is still playing pretty well, 498 yards after not doing much the first month or two of the season. 39 receptions for 4 touchdowns. And then Luther Burton is now their third receiver with 479 yards, 46 receptions, the 1 touchdown. Again, their offensive line is probably top 5 offensive line in the league after the trades that they've done and the draft pick of Darnell Wright 2 years ago. Their defense, again, it's a weird defense, allowing 24.1 points per game, which is 21st, 24th in yards at 345 per game. They give up 5 yards per rush, which is 29th in the NFL, 7.5 yards per pass. Their sack rate is 6.26, which is 21st in the league. But again, like we talked about, the most picks in the league, the most turnovers in the league. They don't turn the ball over much. They have the best turnover differential in the league. When we played them 2 weeks ago, they had the 13th and 8th best third and fourth down defense. After these last 2 weeks, they have gone to like 15th and 17th, I think. So they really dropped back after these last 2 games. Montez Sweat, the defensive end, 8.5 sacks, 21 tackles for loss. Grady Jarrett's on that defense too. Javon Dexter has 5 sacks, the second-year player at defensive tackle. Safety Kevin Bayard has 6 picks. Nishon Wright has 5. Jaquan Brisker is at safety too. He's pretty solid. And then the best piece in their secondary is Jalen Johnson, who's pretty good. I think Trey Edmonds might play in this game, the decent linebacker that they gave a huge contract to, but he hasn't played as well as he did with the Bucks. Ben Johnson and Matt LaFleur don't really hate each other. Again, if Rodgers leads the Steelers and wins against Detroit, the Packers will clinch a playoff spot if they win this game. So that is the Bears. Not a great week as a Packer fan with all the injuries, but Todd, how confident are you going into this game?
I was super not confident minutes after the ACL exploded on live television. Now I'm kind of like, we could win this game. Like, this does feel like a game that, granted, it's at the Bears. They were good. It went down to the wire. But I'm like, I don't believe in Caleb. Like, I don't know how you feel, but I just believe, how many picks have we dropped? A couple picks of his too. Mm-hmm. And it's just like, I just don't believe in Caleb enough to be like, oh yeah, like he's going to come out and beat us now that we're down a little bit. I believe in Jordan Moore. And for that reason, like I do feel a little bit confident, like not like I would have minus the ACL, but like I feel okay.
Yeah, I feel pretty good too. I mean, it is a pretty big game, again, just for the rivalry, for the year, for the future of the NFC North. You know, if the Bears win, they're probably going to win the NFC North, which would be huge for them after, you know, I don't think they have a playoff win in like 20 years. And to clinch a playoff spot essentially with a win would be pretty icky. But again, it's just to keep the Bears as little brother, you have to win this game. You know, if we lose this game, it's almost worse than the loss to the Broncos as far as like an outlook for the rest of the season, because we should beat them. Could be close. I mean, the Bears aren't a terrible team. We'd have to win the last two to, I don't know, probably have some hope again that we can make some type of playoff run. But yeah, I feel pretty decent going into this game too.
Yeah, I was going to ask, this is a random thing. Can I?
Okay.
I was just looking at, like, you sent over the link for, like, this WebEx or this web thing that we're doing here. What kind of field is the Broncos? Is it turf?
I don't know. I hadn't heard much of anything about that field, but obviously you think about that after seeing Parsons. Well, the other thing too is it's a Sean Payton. That was a Sean Payton coach team, and it's like, how dirty were they as well? I mean, we saw that one where the linebacker.
Why is they always dirty?
I don't know. I think it's just some type of advantage you could have, but yeah,
it's a grass field.
Okay. Yeah. The linebacker pushing Jordan Love's head into the ground, which an offensive lineman probably should have stood up for him there.
Yeah, I don't know if anybody saw it, to be honest.
And him getting hit low a couple times, too, it's just, I don't know, bad.
No, they got flagged for one. I'm sure they got fined, whoever that was.
Yeah, I guess we'll see. But yeah, I don't know. I feel good at Soldier Field. It would be nice to, you know, put a, I think it would end the hope for a lot of Bears fans who finally had some optimism this season. But God, I don't know, Soldier Field, we've played pretty well there with Jordan Love. We had the blocked kick there last year with Carl Brooks. Christian Watson usually plays pretty well there. Yeah, I don't know. I feel decent about it. I think there might be some type of, like, you know, Micah Parsons is down. Like, there's some type of thing going
on.
Like
a little bit of a
room.
Resurgence type of thing of, yeah. Like, we got to rally.
We got to prove ourselves, yada, yada. So we'll see. It should be a good game, a Saturday game. Again, we'll play on Saturday the next week, too, against the Ravens, which is kind of interesting. I feel like, do we have back-to-back Thursday games this year or something, too? I don't know.
Back-to-back Saturday games is wild. I didn't realize the Baltimore game was a Saturday.
Yeah, very weird. But yeah, Todd, what is your score prediction for this game?
So I have the Packers winning 27-20.
Okay.
27 being, obviously, the prophecy foretells that number.
Yep. I like that. What is Billy's score prediction?
Yeah, Billy has 24-23 Bears, which is how I felt after Micah exploded on live television.
I do like when one person doesn't pick us to win. It's usually Billy, but I like that.
Sometimes you fall on the sword.
Yeah, I do too, but then again, Billy also said that, you know, we'd lose.
But
last
when
week.
You do it, you tell us that you don't believe it so that you can't. It's kind of like straw man. Like, you're like, I'm doing this for the vibes. That's what you say, maybe. Verbatim.
I have the Packers winning. Similar score to you, 27-23. I'm going to just keep. You got to pick 27 at this point still.
Sure.
It's been 4 or 5 wins at this point.
The odds are with you.
Yeah, very true. History always repeats itself. So I do have us winning. Just barely in this game. Todd, what is your bold prediction?
My bold prediction was 4 sacks for the defense. No one person in particular. And my reasoning behind is because, like, Micah would flush him. But I'm like, without Micah, there isn't as much space to go. So that's why I'm hopeful that can hit.
Okay. Yeah, I think that works. They don't give up a lot of sacks anyways. Yeah, I think we only had 1 sack against them, if that, when we played them 2 weeks ago. So I think that's fair. What is Billy's bold prediction?
Billy had Josh Jacobs for 140-plus rush yards.
Okay, I think that's fair. He hasn't had a 100-yard game this year. Emmanuel Wilson's actually the one who's done that. So my bold prediction, again, I'm superstitious. I'm going to have to wear a new Packer shirt or whatever this week because the last one.
Dude, you got to burn. What did you wear?
No, it's my Farm Aid shirt. It's my Farm Aid. It's got a cow on it. I went to Farm Aid this year, and it's green and gold, so it's a pseudo Packer.
Can you go to Farm Aid again? in the future? Not
in Minnesota. It's probably not going to happen again. And it was a good shirt. I mean, we were on a four game winning streak wearing it, so it could be a lot worse.
But deal with the devil. Four game win streak, and then Micah Parsons dead.
Yeah, well, I'm not going to burn the shirt either. I'll wash it, and then all that stink will come off it. But
oh, okay.
Sticking with what my bold prediction was 2 weeks ago, going to stick with it, so maybe that means we'll beat the Bears again. I have Chris Brooks scoring a touchdown. Again, he's getting a little bit more involved in the passing game once a week.
Is he?
he gets 1 to 2 receptions a game for over like the last month, it feels like. So probably not going to happen.
If he goes from 1 last week and then 2 this week, I mean, that's a big increase percentage-wise.
It's very, very true. So I have Chris Brooks scoring a touchdown. He hasn't scored this year. I think he had 1 last year, which is his only
NFL touchdown. Did he have 1 that he should have scored on and they called it back, or there was a flag or something?
Oh, that was a little thing. Josh Jacobs, that rushing touchdown he had that got called back for illegal formation or whatever.
Oh, that was so...
And Tony Romo was like, oh, someone else was moving at the line too. I rewound it. There should not have been a flag on that play. Like,
because the receiver was set?
Fitzpatrick, like he was set when they snapped it. It was close, but he could still be in motion anyways. So it shouldn't have been an illegal formation.
I didn't watch like the all 22, but like what when Fitzpatrick goes in motion, is there anybody...
No. Both wideouts, neither were
also moving.
No one else was moving. That's what I was looking for.
Okay. Well, yeah, then the refs suck, which is whatever.
There you go. Those refs did suck. I haven't heard who the refs
are
this week.
They did kind of suck. No.
That's it. Everyone's here apart. If you could please leave a 5-star review on Apple or Spotify, that'd be cool. Leave a review too, or rating. I don't know what I said there. Spotify, you can comment. We will read the comments the next week. 2 comments this week.
Ah, perfect. I'm always like, is there comments? Like, yeah. I'm so excited.
I think we've had a comment just about every week, like I said. Maybe it's one awesome. We missed it, or maybe that was training camp or something. But yeah, I always like in the comments. RJ, our friend RJ, he commented this.
Yes, sir.
I had you guys at number 3 on my Spotify Wrap this year, which is really good considering I listen to a lot of podcast varieties. Also, like Todd, I'm here for the comments. I'm ice fishing with my brother next week, so maybe we'll leave some drunken comments between slaying
yes.
fish.
Love it.
And for I think that was before Parsons.
Cry. You could cry and leave one.
Frozen tears if you're out on the lake.
Mm-hmm.
And then Ben and Hobot, you've always liked me calling Hobot. Some of these games rock fights. He commented, feels like we brought a lemon to a rock fight, which I feel like was a pretty.
That's good. A lemon to a rock fight. Yeah, you don't get very far with that.
Yeah. Maybe we stung them in the eyes a little bit, and then they got the rock and just in the second half just beat the shit out of us with the rock.
It was like we painted our lemon black and threw it at them, and they were like, it got them, like they were scared for a second. And then they're like, oh, this is a lemon, and then they hit us with a rock.
But yeah, that's it. Remember, we're playing on Saturday. I think there's a game before us too. I forgot who, but. Yeah, different season now.
You know what?
I'm still optimistic.
You know what's a real bummer?
We can still do it, right?
That,
we can still do it?
We can do it. We got to rally the troops. I'm going to be super honest. I don't know. Like, I want Gary to rally everyone else because I don't know that. I just like, we need Colin Oliver. We need someone. We need Brenton Cox. We need LVN. Like, someone has to step up. Or it's got to be just like a wicked rotation of everyone being fresh. To come in and get that pressure. But like, dude, like with the D line too, it's like, we're so thin at D line. It's just, I don't know. It was just the wrong time for this.
I don't know if we're thin, but it's like, we need that one piece.
Thin, like talent wise, like we don't have, you need a Devontae Wyatt down the stretch.
Sure. I would say our edge position, they're all like B minuses, which is pretty good.
B minuses.
Gary's a B minus. JJ's a B minus. LVN. I mean, they're solid starters. They're not bad. But if you,
I would say like they're C's. They're C's across the board.
Maybe. Yeah, they are. God. Oh,
that's.
Yeah.
I don't know. I was gonna say that. I immediately forgot when I heard you start to say something.
The other thing that I thought about too. Rashawn Gary isn't a captain on this team. Guys like Quay Walker.
It's because the offseason videos.
Xavier McKinney and Isaiah McDuffie are, and Rashawn Gary isn't, which is just kind of makes you think, does make you think a little bit.
Do you put McDuffie at end?
No, fuck no.
Just see what he can do.
Well, I mean, then clamps. He doesn't have to drop back. We saw what he can do in coverage, which is not good.
Okay,
not good.
Well, that's a ridiculous take.
With that, Todd, do you have anything else?
I will just say, like, the one thing I was disappointed in too is that, like, it seemed good. Like Parsons was getting into like the hate the Bears spirit.
Yeah, he misses this.
And we just like he's missing out on like hating the Bears again 2 weeks later. So,
okay, cool. Nothing else.
Nothing else.
All right, AJ Dillon. I don't know if you saw this. Did you see that he was the one behind the Eagles positivity bunny?
I have no idea what a positivity bunny is.
The Eagles,
I hate it.
The Eagles put an inflatable positivity bunny in their locker room, and then the next game they lost on Thursday Night Football. Jalen Hurts looked terrible, and then they got rid of it. Apparently,
is
it
that
was,
where he threw like four picks?
Yeah, he had the pick and then fumbled on the same play. AJ Dillon was the one who put the positivity bunny up. Who's a guy who's been inactive for like the last 6 weeks, which is just hilarious to me.
If you're in the locker room and like you have nothing to contribute, like you're not playing or anything, and then you go and put a bunny up, and it's like, can you let us play the game? Like, can you just like watch us play and like try and contribute in a way that's like helpful to the team instead of like a bunny?
Because first,
it's just annoying.
It was reported that like the offensive line did, but then a couple of Philly reporters like wrote about how AJ Dillon was the guy. It's just very, very funny. I bet he's out of the league next year, but I've kind of said that before.
What's a bummer is it's just like I'm not getting attention because I'm not on the field.
Yeah.
So like right. I'm gonna put a right. rabbit, gigantic yeah. rabbit in the locker room. It's like, man.
Yeah.
Stop it.
With that, AJ Dillon, you're an all-star. Take us out.
To anybody on Twitter or whatever, you can't do what we're doing. Just enjoy, just watch. Anywhere I quit my job. Just won't pay. I worked all year, I worked all month, then they took my money away. Yeah, well now I don't care. Cause they ain't working like me down here. And I said, hey now, little baby, I'm going deeper down.
I don't remember.
Yeah.
What is it called?
I don't know. It's Connor's Point.
Yeah, it is Connor's Point. Okay. But yeah, I was just showing her Superior, and we're like, what's this place? And we walked in, and we're like, this is the coolest cutting board place ever.
It's on Connor's Point?
Yeah. It doesn't make any sense. It's the only actual business there. It's crazy going on that road, too.
Is that the end? Where? I don't see it.
Like mid-island. It's called like Imp. Or something. Imperial. Epicac.
Exodus Global?
No.
Theradyne Outdoors.
No.
That's like
Joel and I used to shoot our bows there.
Yeah. Okay, I was going to say that's like the bow thing. I don't see it.
It's closer to...
Connor's Point Storage. Epurican?
Yes, that's it. Click on it.
This isn't just a game, it's a once-in-a-generation event. The Harlem Globetrotters 100-year tour. Celebrate 100 years of high-flying dunks, 100 years of show-stopping moves, and 100 years of changing the game. Bring the whole family and be part of the legacy. This game is once in a century. Be there at Schottenstein Center on December 27th. Go to harlemglobetrotters.com for your tickets to the 100-year tour.